Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Karen Stokendahl-Poulsen. We talk about her new film, On the Inside of a Military Dictatorship. And again, you're going to hear me say the same thing. Fascinating film, engaging film, something you're going to want to see. A beautiful film on so many levels, and difficult at times to watch just because of the subject and what we're getting into. Burma, Myanmar, Aung San Suu Kyi's rule, or lack thereof, as some might argue. And so Karen and I get into some of the things that went on behind the making of the film and some of the issues that she worked through as she pieced this story together. We talk about democratic reform and the Rohingya refugee crisis, and we talk about democracy being about letting the people decide, and what has 70 years of armed conflict done to Myanmar, and why this is such a delicate issue, and the good guys bad guys thing. It's not that polarized. It's not that simple. We get into trust, and we talk about military dictatorships, and she interviews ex-military leaders and some fascinating conversations and some insights there. We talk about the privileges of a documentary filmmaker and what goes on there. And we talk about compromises that leaders make when you're in power and personal interest and corruption and how just maybe we put this particular leader on a pedestal and what are the implications of that. So stay tuned for the conversation coming up. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing and my speaking. You can order Real Change is Incremental there, a book that I published a few years ago. Would love for you to do that. And if you can support the work that I'm doing here with Face to Face through patreon.com, that would be a huge asset and a huge win for us. Please check that out if you're so inclined. And if you can't do that, I totally get it. Would you mind leaving us a review on iTunes or tweeting about us, sharing us with your friends? We're trying to grow this community over here in a variety of different ways. And don't forget, you can advertise on Face to Face as well. That's another way we're trying to generate some revenue here too. And rabble.ca, I appear on that platform. Check it out. Lots going on there. Blogs, articles, things that will take you a little deeper into some of the issues. And believe me, there's lots. Rabble.ca, that's news for the rest of us. Coming right up, though, a conversation with Karen Stokendahl-Poulsen about her new film, On the Inside of a Military Dictatorship. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest here with us today to talk about her new film, On the Inside of a Military Dictatorship. Karen Stokendahl-Poulsen is here direct from Hot Talks. Karen, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So the film world premiere in Copenhagen not so long ago, Canadian, North American, I guess, premiere here at Hot Docs. Tell us a little bit, as you sort of probably want to talk a little bit about what the film's about, tell us how it's being received. And I'd love to know, you had your premiere here in Canada last night.
I had the premiere, the international premiere here in Toronto last night, and it was a very, very nice premiere and a very engaged audience. Mm. We had, I'd say, a very, very nice Q&A that took us around in many different aspects of this film. I mean, there were questions ranking from how do you see Aung San Suu Kyi today? How would you continue this film if you were to continue telling the story of Burma?
Interesting.
And why did you choose? Because I'm taking quite a... I'm doing the narration of the film myself, and right. I actually step a lot into the story. And people had questions on that choice as well. So there was really a variety of questions and a very interesting debate, I'd say. Even a lot of questions I haven't had before, which is always interesting.
So a fairly engaged audience. Well, that's good. Well, first of all, I'd like to say congratulations on the film. It's a beautiful film, and it's challenging to watch, and it's engaging on so many levels. And I was riveted. I was stuck to the screen, I think whoever asked you the question about the part two, or if you would have, if you had made a 3-hour film or a 6-hour film, where might you have landed? Is I think a fascinating one.
Well, there were so many issues that had to be, and aspects of this that had to be cut out. Mm-hmm. First of all, this film takes us from Burma's history from 2010 and up till today. And it's put in 10 chapters, and only in chapter 9 do we get into this tragic crisis in Rakhine State where the Rohingyas were persecuted mm-hmm. from the country. That is, of course, one of the most difficult scenes to have edited for the film. And the thing is, the film is now, it's 15 minutes long and very close to the ending of, the editing time. This scene was still 15 minutes long because there's simply so many aspects to sure. bring in to that scene. Another aspect that was kept out completely is the issue of China, because this tells the story of how a military regime started to voluntarily, basically, to make democratic reforms and gradually opened up the country, gradually loosened the tight grip on the people, and not least included their enemy number one, Aung San Suu Kyi, into the political process. Mm. Why did they do that? In the film, we tell one of the key reasons for that, which is that they needed help from the West. Right. They needed to have the sanctions lifted. But another aspect, another side of the same story is that they were being eaten up by China. As China grew ever stronger, they were simply afraid that with no other friend, China would basically take over the country. So this was one of the reasons why they started opening up. And with the help of the West, they were able to develop. The West invests in development, whereas China usually invests in infrastructure or some project that will benefit themselves. It can sometimes benefit the country, but in many cases, you get more dependent than you get developed. Mm. And what has happened since Aung San Suu Kyi took power, and you thought she came as the West's darling, but as we know, with the tragic crisis in Rakhine and with the Rohingyas persecution, the West, it's actually more herself that turned away from the West than the West turned away from her. And what happens today is that her new friend is China. Hmm. And she lets China invest heavily in the country. And there are really people that fear how Burma or Myanmar will become simply a vessel state for China.
Do you think,
one aspect.
Yeah, no, that's really fascinating. Karen, do you think that Aung San Suu Kyi has turned away from the West, as you say, towards China because she feels misunderstood? I mean, that's a bit of an oversimplification. Obviously, it's a very complicated issue. And as you say, long road to democracy at the beginning of the film, and that's clearly a thread throughout. But yeah, it's fascinating that she's sort of turned one way to another country that's going to ultimately benefit the country, I suppose, more in the long run, or at least that's how she feels today.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't know if I would, yes, misunderstood, but I think in the way I know her as a character, she's more offended. She doesn't like to be criticized. She's stubborn. So she is not the one to come with an apology for her country's policies. And China doesn't need that. They couldn't care less about democracy or human rights, so it's perfect. I mean, I'm putting it in cynical terms, sure. But it's not that far from reality. I know of Western diplomats that say if only it would take so little for her to admit that things went out of control, that things haven't been handled in the perfect way, in order for the West to be able to keep engaging with Myanmar. But it's very difficult for the West as well that, of course, are there with some values of democratic standards and human right values, that it's very difficult to support the country as such in the situation and the leadership that doesn't want to apologize for 900,000 people fleeing their country and more than 10,000 killed. It's a very delicate situation. And she has had every opportunity in the world to reach out the hand, and she wouldn't have to do much, and then she would get the help from the West.
It seems,
but
so,
it's not what she wants.
Well, it seems so, and I think this comes out in the film to me certainly, and I know a bit about what's been going on there. I followed it to some degree, but obviously very complicated, and so many cross-cultural issues, and so on. And I thought it was really interesting too how you bring into the film near the end of the film this conversation about, you know, just this assumption that democracy can work anywhere in the world is a bit of a fallacy. This idea that what we think
right.
works here can work, you know, there, wherever there happens to be. It's so much more nuanced, and there's history and there's just so many factors at play.
Absolutely. And I don't think it's so much that democracy cannot work anywhere in the world, because I think it can. If you narrow it down, democracy is about letting the people decide. And I think it's a universal need and wish for people. But democracy is much more complex than saying we have to install an election.
Right.
It's not just to go and vote. And you have a country that has been dominated by a military regime for 50 years mm-hmm. that goes into every aspect of society. And you have also had 70 years of armed conflict. It's a fragile state. And in order to start building a democracy, you have to go much deeper into those structures. And not only in the state structures, but just as much in people's mentalities. And I think that's what we need to recognize from the Western side, that when you talk democracy in third world countries or in authoritarian regimes, it's really a long journey. And that's in the film. We have this closing scene where the Aung San Suu Kyi's ambassador to the UN breaks down crying because he's taking all this criticism mm-hmm. from the entire world society. And I understand why the world is criticizing. There's nothing factually wrong in all of that criticism. And of course, you stand on the right side of history when you pronounce those words, because of course you have to stand up for people that have been committed to a genocide. But do you take one step back? If you dare to look at some of the complexities of this, you see that it's not so simple, and that by simply crucifying that guy, you have a guy that stepped out of the darkness after 50 years. He doesn't know how to behave on the international stage. And of course, here he is the representation of a nation that simply doesn't know how to act on the world stage, how to be a democracy, and not to defend a genocide. It's very interesting when you allow yourself to be an observer for a moment and look at this as a school class where everybody decided who's the bad guy in class, and how can that guy ever stand up and do it better when he's already been judged in that way? Mm. No chance. So it's delicate, and I know I've been met with some reactions for people that think I do not criticize Aung San Suu Kyi enough, for instance, and also that I'm not taking a clear enough stand, that I'm not standing enough up for the Rohingyas. And to that I will say, I think first of all I'm doing it. I think there's no doubt where I stand on, of course we should, of course it's wrong, of course it's terrible what's happening, it's a tragedy. But from that on, I think it's too simple to just keep stating that. If we want to do more, if we want to go deeper, we have to do the much more dangerous exercise, that is to start understanding how this could happen. And that means also starting to dare understand the people that have been in charge in this situation. And it means, it doesn't mean that you defend them when you start trying to explain how they may think. But it's of course what can be difficult is when it starts to look like you make it look as if it could happen to anybody. But it's also maybe the most important part is, in this film I also talked to the military dictators that were in power for 50 years. Absolutely the bad guys. And we get to understand a bit how they are thinking, and we get to meet them as human beings. And I believe that is what you need to do in order to ever be able to change such a regime, to change governmental decisions, and to make sure these things never happen again. If you don't dare to put yourself there, how could you ever understand what it would take to do it differently?
No, it's
as long as you're just screaming from one side of the camp and saying this is wrong, you're not going to change anything.
Yeah, I think, I really appreciate where you're going with that. And I think it, for me, I haven't read those criticisms about your film. I tried to stay away from any reviews until until you and I had chatted. I typically try to do that for most of my interviews and my conversations on Face to Face. But I think it is clear to me where you stand as a filmmaker. But I think you've left it kind of for us to decide to some degree. I think on a certain level, you know, if the reports are right, and they certainly seem to be, and the international community is in agreement, yeah, of course we're going to say this is an outrage, this is an atrocity, these are human rights violations of an epic proportion, this is genocide, etc. But a better the better conversation is to go deeper and to say how did it happen, and now what can be done? What is, you know, what is this long road to democracy, and what does it look like? You know, you so sort of quickly point out at the beginning of the film that, you know, on this road before the tragedy there was hope, and I kind of wonder if that's been kind of shattered a little bit, not only within the international community. Oh, you know, there's no hope for Myanmar, there's no hope for Burma. Has that also taken hold in the country itself? That's to me, that's a significant observation.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what happened. This crisis has captured every other aspect of development and democratization of the country that was underway. And it's become, the country is so dependent also on the support. I mean, financially, you need, it's one of the success of the previous government that they were able to attract investments from abroad. It's so crucial for one of the poorest countries in the world to attract investments and to be able to develop the country financially. And that's, of course, one of the reactions to the crisis, that investors are fleeing, donors are fleeing. And that means to every aspect, you have very good development projects that are losing donors because nobody will touch Myanmar due to the crisis, which is, again, a logical it's logical what's happening, but of course it's this crisis has captured the country's entire development and democratization process.
You bring out maybe halfway through the film, and I think it's remarkable the access you got to the people that are in the film. I'd love to hear that. I'd love to hear more about that. But can you talk a bit about the interview with Aung San Suu Kyi where you? She basically says nobody trusts anyone anymore, and this lack of trust has seeped into our very bones, I think was the line. That's fascinating to me. I mean, and I've done a fair bit of work in Cambodia, for instance, and Over the years, I've been traveling to the country and working there on a development level, and as most of my listeners will know, but lack of trust in that culture, and you could say about any culture, I suppose. People don't necessarily right. trust people they don't know, and so on, but there was almost a palpable lack of trust, and I connect it back through their culture, right. and I've done some reading on it and conversations with locals, and it's about the Khmer Rouge and the Civil War. And it's all kind of connected, but no one can really put their finger on it, if you know what I mean. It's just, it's a part of the culture. And I wondered if that is that one of the threads, one of the many complicated threads that is Burma, that is Myanmar?
Absolutely. And I think that goes with the fact that it was a military regime for 50 years.
Right.
I think she really puts it well. She says this, like you just said, nobody trusts anybody. Nobody knows who's informing on whom.
Right,
you always have to be careful. And exactly that, and I would say, coming from Denmark, which has been, which is called the country in the world where people trust each other the most, and where people, when I am abroad, laugh of me because I would trust people with anything. It's taken a while for me to understand what it actually means to be surveilled, to know that people are looking at you, that they are looking after you, and that they are they're tapping into your cell phone, and they
right.
Anything can be suspected. And I must say, somehow I think I came rather naive, both as on every level, actually. The world called this democratization a miracle back in 2011 and 12 and up until 15 actually, and I jumped into that trap as well, thinking, fantastic, a military regime that finally sees their own shortcomings and wants to democratize.
Right.
And of course the story is not that simple. Of course there were much more cynical and calculated reasoning behind this decision. You asked about the access also. That's, again, I was given... The main character of my previous film went to Oxford with Aung San Suu Kyi.
Okay.
He was also a diplomat on behalf of the EU dealing with Myanmar. And he was part of negotiating with the military regime in order for them to lift... for EU to lift the sanctions. And while I was making the film with him, I kept hearing those stories from him. I was even present at some point when he received a phone call from Aung San Suu Kyi. So I got vicariously very, very interested. And then when the film was finished,
go ahead.
The other film called The Agreement, it was selected for Human Rights Film Festival in Burma. And that made him say, whoa, who would have thought? Why don't you make the film about Aung San Suu Kyi's presidential election? And he would introduce me to her for the first time. So I would have a meeting set up by him. And he would introduce me also to some of the people on the military side. So I thought I had a relatively good starting point. Which I had, but it didn't mean that the way from there and until having these people participate in the film wasn't very, very, very long and full of bumps in the road.
I bet.
Because exactly that, nobody trusts anybody.
Oh, I can't. So, there's one interview, and it's near the end of the film, and there's a window in the back, and there's a curtain, kind of a translucent curtain, and somebody walks by in the background, and I couldn't help but smile and think, somebody's listening in.
Out on this.
Yeah. Somebody's out there. They got the parabolic microphone. They're checking in on them.
Absolutely. I mean, there was one interview we were given by one of the really top ex-leaders in the military regime. And when we arrived to put out our camera, another crew arrived to film what we were going to film.
Oh, you're
we were a little puzzled. And somebody said, I asked, who are these people? And they said something like, Information Service.
The Ministry of Information.
They didn't say specifically who yeah. they were. They wouldn't specify. Then at some point, I don't remember exactly which words they used, but it was there were a lot of assistants running around while we were setting up. And they said, I don't remember if that was the word they used, but it was something in the order of saying, the master wants to speak with you. Mm. And I was like, whoa, okay. And then I was taken to another room to meet the participant of the film, of the interview, before the interview itself. And there he said, really firmly asked me, why are you here? And why are you making this film? And at least this gave me a chance to kind of defend myself and explain why I was there. And I said, I'm here because nobody ever listened to this side of the story before. Mm. Many people in the West listen to Aung San Suu Kyi, but they never ask the questions and listen to the other side. And as you're going through, since you decided to democratize, you all step down from the military regime, there's a lot to praise from that decision, and I would really like to hear your perspective. And you could tell that he was happy with that explanation, and then he ordered the other camera team out.
Oh, wow, that's fascinating.
And then people dared to tell us that this was Secret Service police. And they were now angry that he had ordered them out, but now he wanted to set the rules for this interview. And what happened next day, we conduct this interview. He seemed super happy about it. It's big smiles and handshakes and thank you very much when we leave. And let's meet again soon and continue some filming. Next day, my people are blocked from calling his people. And I'm like, but how can this be? There must be a mistake. I just looked that man in the eye. He was so happy to participate. And I asked my Burmese partners to find another way to get to him. And you can tell they know more than me. They understand this much better than me. So they're looking a little down, and I'm saying, no. I know he wants to participate. I talked to him. I looked him in the eye. Mm-hmm. Get to him somehow. And then they do what I say because they don't dare to it's, again, in Burmese style. You don't say things as directly.
That's
as,
right. Sure.
We do. So they don't answer me back. They actually do what I'm asking them to do, and they get to him, and then finally they can deliver the answer directly from him saying he doesn't have more time.
Mm.
And I'm so shocked because what is it I don't get?
The polite or the not so polite brush off. Yeah. No, you know, it's interesting. You don't want to stereotype, but there is something about that idea behind saving face and you know, I've often it's the polite brush off. Yep. Wonderful, big smile, wonderful handshake. And then it's interesting that you were blocked. That's fascinating. Do you think you got from these ex-military leaders? And again, it's remarkable the access, but do you think you got the real answers? Were you able to sort of drill down, as they say, and peel back some of those layers?
I think I got much more than I would have expected because, mm-hmm. of course, I didn't expect anyone to break down crying and confess and saying, I did wrong things in my past. I was part of conducting terrible atrocities and gunning the people down on the streets and keeping the people in a tight grip. I shouldn't have done that. I didn't expect any of that. But what I feel I did get was, since they were explaining how and why they did things, I got an insight in their way of thinking.
Mm.
And I think it's in the small details that you get that logic. It's in the way when they say, we removed everybody from the blacklist, whether we like them or not.
Right.
They're so proud of saying this, which to me reveals, first of all, you had a blacklist.
Right.
And second of all, you used to think that you could put anyone on that blacklist. You had the power to do so, not for any reason that belonged to rule of law, but simply according to your whim. So to me, all of these details, all of the way they're telling things, reveal how they're used to thinking, how they're trying to change things. And it goes for for all of them. And that said, I would say this one other thing that happens, one of the privileges of being a documentary filmmaker is that when you finally sit in that room, when you spend years and years on trying to access the highest level and get to the amongst the five top leaders in the military regime, and you sit in that room with them, then I'm not there with any agenda but getting them to talk.
Sure.
I don't even have a commissioning editor. I mean, I do have, but it's at such an arm's length that they are not. I'm not told you have to come out of that conversation and have this and that answer. I'm not there as a state with any. I'm not even there with an NGO to try to persuade them to live up to certain standards. It's simply to try to understand their mindset. And I think that creates something very, very unique. And I have the feeling several times I was told in the beginning of an interview that this will give you, you will have 15 minutes max. And in the end, it was more than 1 hour and 15 minutes.
Right.
And I think it's simply because in that situation, it almost creates some space for them as well that they're not used to having, not used to talking
absolutely.
About things.
I wouldn't think that they get that kind of opportunity, and if they do, the tendency would be to say no, would be to shut it down before it even started. I wonder. I mean, what are your thoughts on the whole notion of power corrupting and authenticity and transparency and leadership I thought it was really interesting. I love the 20 lane highway or road that you use in the film, and the metaphor of that is quite interesting and brilliant to me. Yeah. But near the end of the film, as you're driving away, and for that ex-military leader who's quite humorous, by the way, he's got a great laugh. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, off the top of my head.
But pointing out where all the mansions are. And just just highlighting that gap, that breakdown, that dysfunction of many governments, most governments, I suppose, between people at the top and sort of people at the bottom. So I'm just wondering. And I guess maybe the question is, in Aung San Suu Kyi's case, has power corrupted, or is she really in this for, is she willing to give something up today in order for history to look back and say, you know what, maybe she made some of the decisions she made were not as crazy as we thought.
I think if you talk about in general terms, do power corrupt people? I think to a certain extent, absolutely. But what I find more interesting is basically the real difficult compromises you have to take when you're in power.
Right.
And it's the one that also often puts a distance to the people. And it's a real, real dilemma in democracies, I'd say, because the answers you have to give when you lead a government are unfortunately not as simple as when you are election campaigning.
Right.
Or if you are the people demanding certain issues. Sometimes they come down to single and simple decisions, but it's so rare. And any of these decisions go into a much bigger pattern of ruling a state on every level. And that is what I find the most interesting. And then what do you do when you have to take some of these very difficult decisions? And it's often it's about compromise. It's about dealing with other parties. And when I say parties, I don't mean political parties. It's dealing with the international community. It's
right.
dealing with political opponents. It's dealing with your administrations and so on and so forth. And in those complicated political processes, compromises have to be made. And it's part of it. You shouldn't go out proudly and say, I got everything through. It means you were the dictator. You have to make a compromise. Otherwise, you don't let democracy happen inside the state, inside the room of power. So, of course, that can give a distance to the ones you're supposed to represent. But at the same time, I believe if you're sincerely trying to find the better solution, this is the way power must unfold. But of course, it's also tainted by personal interest and corruption and so on. So we have a, it's difficult is that some decisions have to be taken behind closed doors because you don't know what happens in. And it's a real dilemma, and it's a real difficult dilemma that I think we need in all our democracies that are under heavy pressure today, not least from simple demands for the people's voices, which I believe is a real challenge for our democracies. I think we need to go much deeper into this and understand how does it work? How does democracy really work?
Well, I think, you know, Karen, I was going to say one of the things, you know, and I think the metaphor, I think, of storytelling and documentary filmmaking, and you must know this well, but there's so many layers, right? So here's this film about Burma. It's on the inside. It's about the military and so on. It's about international response. But when you start to unpack it and you start having a conversation like we're having, you start to see the connections to the complexities,
right,
the difficulties, the nuances to all of this. And so for, I mean, one of the takeaways for me is to say, as you know, from the West, to say that I can just take me as in the West, I can just go in and say, wow, what you need is democracy. What you need is my version of democracy. And
right.
I think slowly we're learning that this is just not the case. And it doesn't work across the board, you know, and it's about context, and it's about listening, and it's about others and so on. So I guess I'm saying all that to congratulate you too on a really layered film and a complex.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, such a mess really in some respects, isn't it? It's such a difficult thing to know, you know, what is next, you know, how does somebody get involved? Like, what's the call to action here for a Canadian 21-year-old who's doing a degree in political science? You know, how do we get to that person?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me, we're going to have to wrap it up here in a couple minutes, but Aung San Suu Kyi, do you think she said yes partially because she wanted the opportunity to not to apologize, as you said earlier, because of, you know, I think you called her stubborn as well, but to actually sort of give her side, give her take a little bit to say, hey, this is way messier than you think.
To be honest, I think Aung San Suu Kyi participated simply because I was amongst close connections to her. As simple as that. And then, of course, when I met her, we built some sort of trustful relationship for a while. But I believe in this film where I really got close to her is actually not so much directly from her, because she has this presidential, almost royal thing around her.
Right, I bet.
The guy you just mentioned called Wintain, which is her very, very close associate, he speaks in the film really frankly and truly about how she has, how she thinks, how she operates, which situation she's in. And he's been really, really close to her all the way through. So I feel, thanks to him, I felt I got much closer to her than I actually did by having some direct access to her.
Do you think?
But
Karen,
of course, the combination is. Sorry.
I was going to say, do you think she would be happy with the film on a certain level?
I think so. We tried our best to get it to her, and we invited her for. But I think a state councillor's agenda these days is pretty packed. So I'm not sure she has watched it yet. But everybody that saw it in Myanmar says she will be very happy about this film, because I think it gives some layers of explanations of her situation that are often cut out in the media when you have to give short headlines. But I think one last thing about this with her in power. I'm not so sure she actually got corrupted by power. I think we as the West never saw who she was as a person. I think we put her on a pedestal and called her a saint, while she was always, and she didn't claim to be otherwise, a politician. Much more strategic and even cynical political player than we would had imagined. because it looks so pretty when you're just there in house arrest and don't take any compromises.
Right. Yeah,
and as soon as she enters power, you start seeing her real face. And that's there even before this Rakhine crisis and the way she's been acting in that crisis. So I tend to say that I think she was never the person we thought she was.
Mm.
But if you put all the elements into the situation and start understanding why she ended up where she did and all the dynamics of what happened around her and
In her history,
put the context,
and her family and how
exactly.
That was new for me.
If you put all those things into the picture, I think she's not the devil she's being crucified for being these days either. It doesn't mean I defend her. I absolutely think she deserves a lot of criticism. But I think the picture was never as simple, neither before nor after this crisis.
Well, what a fascinating film and a conversation that I wish we could continue, Karen. I really appreciate your time today, and I wish you well. You've got a few more showings at Hot Docs. I trust that your Q&As will continue to be, engaging and interesting, and will hopefully get people to the next level. I mean, having worked in development for years, I definitely go into these the situations, these types of films, these types of stories with a sort of an understanding that says, wow, there's way more going on here than meets the eye. But the way you end the film, 900,000 refugees and 10,000 people, at least 10,000 people dead, and the atrocities that are being committed, it just, where do you go? Is it about sanctions? It seems at a certain level, there's only a political answer.
Right.
And there's conversations we can continue to have, and hopefully others will make films like yours and keep it going. But there is a part of you that kind of wonders, wow, how can I make a difference here?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's,
if you were to engage in from the Western perspective in Burma, you mean, or
as somebody, a student stepping into this story for the first time and saying that,
right.
and being outraged by the situation and saying now what? And I think really the call to action is to get a better understanding of what's going on and to reach out to people who are on the inside,
right.
as you have done, and try to understand the conversation and the issues and then go from there. It's a crazy, beautiful world we live in, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah.
Karen, thank you for your time today. We've been talking with Karen Stokendahl Poulsen about her new film, On the Inside of a Military Dictatorship. You can see it at Hot Docs now, and stay tuned. Thanks, Karen, for your time today.
Yeah, thank you so much for talking to me.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.